Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Let's take a different perspective this time. We are to talk about body. The body. And in a first approach, it seems to be disconnected with spirituality, because to be spiritual is something that most people would connect with mind, with mental activity, even with your brain. So it is something that seems to have little to nothing relationship with the body. Very clever and influential people are even suggesting that the future of mankind lies in redefining the relation between mind and matter. What I will tell you, that probably is not news for you, in the next few minutes, can sound like science fiction, but it is not. Well, the idea is that in your brain, what is happening all the time is electrical impulses. And that can be repeated or mimicked in a different hardware. So the original hardware is fleshy, and that's the brain. But that circuitry can be, or that's the point of these people, can be repeated, mimicked, or probably improved in a different hardware. Think of your brain as the hardware, and think of your mind as the software. That's the point of these people. And you know that a software can run in different hardwares. We have an operating system that is well used in many parts of the world. It is called Android. Probably you have, as I do, some sort of device that is using Android. Your hardware is different from mine. Your device can come from a different country, could be made up of different materials, but it is running the same software. So this metaphor is now being extended to cover also the case of human mind. Or some people contend that that's possible. You see the implications of this. It has far-reaching consequences. So that means that we could take in a future, long future, near future, we don't know, we could take the software that is running in your head and download that software to a different hardware so as to be effectively immortal. Because your software in a different hardware could be kept running virtually forever. I can imagine your heart, your mind popping up questions Well, what about the soul? What about human dignity? What about personhood? What about faith? So, this ideology that comes from the techno world is taking over, at least at a certain elite of thinkers, shakers and movers, as they say, in American culture. Very prestigious institutes dedicated to high level of research are discussing these kind of ideas. Another perspective, artificial intelligence. Chances are that you have heard of the singularity. The singularity. What's that? The singularity is a point in human history, or should I say in history, because it won't be any longer human, a point in history such that from that point onwards, intelligence will exist chiefly and mainly in machines. The idea is that thought can be programmed. And the idea is that one after the other, milestones that had been regarded as impossible to reach have been already reached. Some 10 years ago, there was an IBM computer that was able to beat the grandmaster of chess. So the human champion, the best chess player we have, was unable to beat the machine. The machine was smarter than the human. So this is kind of fiction, but it is not, it is happening. And then you have here in America a very well-known show, which is Jeopardy. Jeopardy is a different kind of intelligence. It is not the predictable movements on a chessboard. Jeopardy entails different mental operations, because in Jeopardy you have to deduce what is not said, what is suggested, and that is that makes that show or that contest so addictive and so attractive to many people, because you are working not with what is said but what is suggested. Can a machine work with suggested concepts? Can a machine beat a human? The best human challenger can be beat by a machine? The answer came last year. A machine can. So this is becoming serious. How far we are from the situations of robots taking over the world and deciding that they are our overlords and we are their servants. So this is the nightmare coming true. Wait a minute. It could be worse. Artificial intelligence will reach a point in which programming computers will be done by computers. I recently heard a very interesting talk about the internet and about the very, very complicated algorithms that are the entrails of internet. you and I most probably use Google or something like that. But that's the best known search machine in the internet. Well, what's the basic? What's the basic black box of Google? It is programming. Google keeps scourging the net, looking for links and links to links, and weighing different options so as to give you the best fitting answer to your quest. You're looking for something, and Google has a vast, incredibly vast database and very, very smart algorithms to know what you are looking for and trying to give you the best answer. So it is an exercise of intelligence as well. Well, these algorithms that are very complex are becoming too complex for the human mind. And that was the point of this talk I am referring to. Programming is setting of instructions. But a set of instructions, which is kind of a recipe, how long could it be and still be handled by a human being? And the problem is that now we have programs that have not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but millions of lines. So that if you are to touch one of these lines, you have first to study the whole thing. And to study the whole thing will eat up months of your life. For example, take something like these sets of programs, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, that's called a suite, Office Suite. Well, if you come to work, even if you are very, very clever, and you come to work to Microsoft, they don't put you next week working on Office. You have a very, very uphill road entering into a different world, entering into millions and millions of lines of code. Probably a year or a year and a half after entering to work in that Office project, you are able to say, hey, now I suggest that we move this module from here to there. But programs keep growing and growing. So that now, engineers are using computers to enter into this world. And the suggestions for changing lines of code come not mainly from humans, but from other computers. So this is computers changing computers. Code designed to change code, because no human being is able to cope with that amount of information. We are no longer able to handle such a monster. You can imagine what will happen next. The next step is that you have heard of this version 1.5, 1.6, 1.7, then version 2, 2.1, 2.0, version 3, version 3.1, 3.2, etc. Okay. The problem is that at some point, no human being will be able to make the step from, say, version 11 to version 12. It is simply impossible. You cannot handle that. And it is not that you're less able to other people, it's that than other people. No person will be able to handle that. That's approaching the singularity. And what is called the singularity? The singularity is that point in history in which we have to acknowledge that these machines are really smarter than us, and they will take over their own improvement completely. So some people propose that at some point computers will be, well, closest to alive as you can desire. Because what you will have at that point is that these machines, these programs, will improve themselves, will analyze themselves, and will improve themselves with no human interaction. So they will become even smarter. And if at this point we are unable to cope with that, clearly when that point comes, we no longer will be able to handle those computers. They, some people say, will have a life of their own. They will be alive. And the problem is that once they are alive and they keep improving themselves, writing and rewriting and improving their own code with no human being able to understand their language, because their language will become more machine-like than human-like. If you go to programming, for example, Word or Excel or something like that, and you see the actual code, something that very few people are able to, because these corporate, these enterprises, keep their code very, very secret. But suppose you're an engineer with a very high rank level and you have access to this code, you could recognize many words, typically words in English, in that code. Some words. But once the singularity comes, what you will have is that this code will be completely written in machine language. So for the human being, even entering into the entrails of this new monster will be completely meaningless. What you would see is a long, almost infinite chains, strings of ones and zeros. It's not a pleasant future, or I don't know how much comfortable you feel with that. But that's happening right now. I'm 46, will be 47 in May, but I am already accepting gifts. Okay. Probably in my own lifetime, major changes won't happen. In my own lifetime, let's suppose that according to the standard of living, I still have 25, 30, 40. Let's think of 40 years. Probably the really, really major changes won't happen in that time. But I see very young people here. So what's the future hold for you? What will you see? At that point, when these programs are rewriting themselves with no human intervention, the only possibility is a sort of veneration. The system says, and the system rules, and the system has decided, and the system, be it in the cloud or be it in some particular service in particular places, will have enormous power without human intervention. Well, I mention all this so that we realize that body is something very important, because What is behind all this theory of the singularity and very, very high artificial intelligence? What is behind all that is that the body doesn't matter. The body doesn't matter. Because you can't replace it. We can build something that will be more intelligent, far, far smarter than you and me. So your particular instantiation, that's the word they use, the particular instantiation of the software you are, that particular instantiation, which is so weak, which is subjected to Parkinson, Alzheimer, and all sorts of illnesses, and of course, subjected to aging, all that will be superated, will be left far behind when we find this new instantiation. And the new instantiation is this hardware running your mind. There is even a man, I remember his first name, R-A-Y, Ray, I suppose they pronounce that, Ray something, but excuse that I don't remember the last name, and that's crucial, but that's a problem of my hardware. This Ray says that he is preparing to download his mind. So he's serious. He's really committed to the thing. I am preparing to download my mind. I am that serious that I will die, this body will die. And when my body dies, I, some form of me, will remain on this world, but in a different hardware. So there will be minds this size. That's what they think. Okay. What are the consequences of this line of thought? Body is not important. Embryos are not important. Fetuses are not important. That's preparation for that. You know all this discussion about stem cells and embryonic stem cells. As a short reminder, stem cells are very important cells we have, especially in the early stages of our life. And the main feature of stem cells is that they can become different tissues from two almost identical or even identical stem cells. According to some procedures, you can make cells for muscle, cells for nerves, cells even for fat tissue. Probably you're interested in gaining fat, aren't you? Well, so that's the kind of research we don't love. Stem cells have that power, and that speaks of regenerating tissues. If we are made up of tissues, different kinds of tissue, what would be the problem of regenerating? What about growing a liver? What about growing a kidney? What about growing a lung? That would be simply wonderful. So my kidney is not working. I need another one. Probably I have to pay with my healthy kidney to get the new one. Because, believe me, it will be very, very dear at the beginning. Then prices will go down, as it happens all the time with these devices. Prices will go down, and you get new eyes, new nose, new kidney, new everything, and don't get too excited. So you get everything new, fresh, and improved. That's only wonderful. But the technology for these stem cells is connected to research with embryos, human embryos. And we Catholics are very clear on this. We know that destroying a human life is destroying a human life. No matter what stage you perform the killing, is murder. We are clear on that. We are adamant on that. So, there is a profound gap, a profound difference between this language of technology that sees the body just as the hardware and our understanding of the body. What is so precious about your body? Even if your body is not working properly. I remember in Colombia some years ago, I greeted a lady who was not that young at that point. And I greeted her. "How are you?" And she said, "Well, not completely well. What doesn't hurt doesn't work." So even if your body is not working as it used to, what is so precious about your body? Why is body that precious to us? Why we treasure a body that can age and that is subject to illness, to tiredness, to inefficiency? Some of these processes we cannot stop. My father is still alive. My mother has died. She died a couple of years ago. My father is near 80 at this point. But he's not receiving gifts yet because his birthday is in July. Okay. So, my father has a problem in his kidneys. And the doctor told us, "You have to know that since you reached 40 years of age, performance of your kidneys is in decline. And it is not because you are you. It is because that's the functioning of the human body. And there's no known solution for that. If you lead a healthy lifestyle, that wouldn't be a big problem for you when you really become old. But that cannot be stopped. There's no way of stopping it." Immediately, as soon as I learned this, I said, "Okay, so it is now 6 years that I have been in decline." What if I could stop that? What if I could replace everything in my body? But the central question is not that one. The central question is, why my body is so important? Let's take some texts from the scripture, and then we will try to connect that with our first talk. We have this message in the first letter of Saint Paul to the Corinthians. "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For the temple of God, which you are, is holy. Wow, that's powerful. I am a temple. So I am not just hardware. I am a temple. Temple of God. If this very intelligent Ray, the one who is downloading his mind, if he succeeds in downloading his mind to a device, probably this size, what about the temple of God? Is there anything that is essentially sacred about the body? We believe so. We do believe so. But please, be with me in affirming that we have to rediscover this kind of sacredness. We need people seeing their bodies as sacred. And that is connected to many, many very important Christian teachings. And that is why great Pope John Paul II encouraged people, encouraged theologians to develop theology of the body. Theology of the body. I know that you are Catholics very much aware and very much in appreciation of your own faith. I do encourage you to make a little research in the monster. The monster that very soon will be nobody's monster, because it will be its own. Go to the monster and look for theology of the body. That's one of the central themes of John Paul II's teaching. And it is great. When you see your body as sacred, you treat your body in a very different way. It is completely out of sight. Anything like fornication, like pornography, and like using the body as a toy. And that's what is happening. What we have now is that many people are using their own bodies as toys for entertainment. And you remember, in our first talk we mentioned that one of the consequences of paganism and neo-paganism is that pleasure and selfishness take over. So, if you regard your body as sacred, what a big difference that is. Think of respect for other people. Think of expressions of affection. Think of maternity. Maternity. It is not the production of new hardware. New fleshy hardware. No. A baby is not a set of spare parts for other human beings. No. It is sacred. It is sacred. And if it is sacred, we all bow before the sacred of the other human being. Think of sexual relationships. What is sexual relationship when you think of your body as sacred? It is an altogether different story. Because it is celebration of God's love, celebration of God's presence, and it is a true sacrament. Now you understand why it is not the same living in holy marriage within the bonds of holy marriage and living just because I desire you. Do you desire me? Very much so. No. It's not that way. It's not simply a problem of molecules and chemistry. It is far more than that. It is commitment. It is self-giving up because of love. It is offering. It is celebrating God's love. So, in the face of all this techno literature and ideology regarding the human body, we need to recover this expression. There's something irrepeatable in my body. If we can send this message, especially to young people, to boys and girls, to teenagers, that will make chastity and purity and friendship and respect and everything that is connected to affective life completely different. So you can imagine, because I didn't bring my PowerPoint presentation, so you can imagine in that part of the screen, you're powerful to imagine. That's part of your hardware. At the center of the screen, you can imagine body. And you can imagine lines connecting to different themes. For example, respect for life, respect for yourself, appreciation of marriage, pro-life movement, resurrection, and things like that. It is very important, body, and to love your body. It is so curious that if you mention loving your body in a different context, not a Lenten retreat, because you know what a Lenten retreat is. But if you mention loving your body in a different context, what would people think of that? What is loving your body? Well, it would be something sensual, or it would be something like pampering yourself. I really like that word, pampering. So you pamper yourself. Your skin is so delicate and you're so sensitive, and you're pampering yourself, and you're like a princess. And you walk like a princess because you pamper yourself and you love your body. But there is a serious contradiction, because after you have pampered yourself, you destroy your heart. Does it make any sense? People nowadays, and I am thinking especially of young ladies, they pamper themselves and they become so delicate, so sensitive, so pretty. And when they are so perfect, they destroy their own lives. And I say they destroy their own lives because what is most precious in their lives, their capacity for loving and being loved, gets completely wretched. And that's a pity. Is your heart, is your capacity for love less precious than your beautiful skin? I'm sure it is not. I'm not completely against you pampering yourself. I think it is good. And to some extent, it is also a social duty. It is a social duty. If you keep yourself in a good mood and you keep yourself well to be seen, well, that's not bad, that's good. To some extent, it is a social duty, I repeat myself, but is that important in comparison with keeping your own capacity for being loved? Do you realize people that are committing suicide nowadays? They have very beautiful skins, very beautiful eyes, and pampered bodies. But they are destroying themselves. So what's the point of that? Loving your body is loving the capacity God has given you, has bestowed on you. The capacity the Lord has given you to be His presence, His message, His language. The wonderful thing about the body is that it is your language, your main language, your first language. Your first language is not English, nor is it Spanish or Chinese or whatever. Your first language, your first expression of what you are is your own body. Your body, and now we are rediscovering bodily language. Your own body, that's your first expression. But then please, add to the equation that your expression not only of yourself, you are a syllable of God. You're a word of God. You're a sentence coming from God's mouth. In creating you, God said something to the universe. God said something to mankind. You are an irrepeatable message from God. What God is telling us through you cannot be said through any other means. That's the powerful message of John Paul II. You are unique. And what God is telling us through you cannot be said through any other means. When you take that seriously, when you understand that you are unique and that your body is the first language of that uniqueness to proclaim God's greatness, to proclaim God's beauty, to proclaim God's wisdom, then you understand what the Blessed Virgin sang in her famous Magnificat. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God my Savior. She felt herself as a shout of joy coming from God's mouth. And that's you. And please listen to me. Every single human baby, I have to add human, because some people care for babies from animals and not from human babies. Every human baby has the right of feeling himself or herself in this light. I am a shout of joy coming from God's mouth. I am so valuable. I am unique. And my first expression, it is what is unique in me. When you study, what's been the process of this progressive decline in appreciation of the body? When you study that process, you realize something. The first ideology that really weighs down the importance of the body is trying to make people all alike. I mean, sometimes in gatherings or conventions or congresses with young people, I like to tease them a little bit and to say things like this. You are very original, aren't you? Yes, I am. Very original. That's why you all use the same sneakers. Think of tattoos. Why are you doing that to your skin? The one reason is because everybody else does it. There's no other reason. Uniqueness. Uniqueness is your treasure. But uniqueness is not eccentricity. It is different, uniqueness from eccentricity. Eccentricity is the explicit desire to be odd, and to be odd so as to separate yourself from the rest of the community, from the rest of mankind. That's eccentricity. Originality and uniqueness are connected to God. It is God that makes you unique. Because I suppose this is the most mystical sentence that I am about to say. Listen to this. God is pronouncing you right now. God is pronouncing you. You come from the mouth of the Lord, and the Lord is pronouncing you right now. He is sustaining, supporting you through His word. You have that in the letter to the Hebrews. Exactly that. He holds the universe in His powerful voice, in His powerful word. And now we understand that the chief reason, the main reason for appreciating the body is not because it is the best possible hardware. I'm very sorry. We are not, and we never were, best possible hardware. And this is not news. This is not news. This is not because of the cybernetic or cybernetic revolution. This is not because of the singularity. This is not because of the transformation that artificial intelligence research has brought with itself. No, we never were best possible hardware. Think of your eyes. Were they at some point best eyes in the world? I know that the loving husband will turn to his wife and will say, yes, yours are best possible eyes. Okay, that's loving, that's good. Okay, admittedly, that's good, that's beautiful. But poetry aside, our eyes are not the best possible eyes. Eagles, just to mention an animal, have better eyes than we have. So it is not that we have best possible hardware. What makes your body so unique and so precious, it is not, it is the best possible hardware. We are subject to decay. Will I? Yes, you will. You will decay. Oh no. But your decay, your decay and your decline is not necessarily bad news, because there are gracious ways of declining. Why you say that? I say that because you're a message from God. Because you come from the mouth of the Lord. And God is pronouncing you. So, at this point in your life, you are a half-finished sentence. That's your life. You're a half-finished sentence. With some people dangerously coming to the... Well, we don't know, actually. We don't know. Young people, and not so young people, we don't know, really. But the Lord is pronouncing a message. I am a message. I am a sentence that God is pronouncing. And the sentence is like an arc. Every point in the arc has its own meaning and its own beauty. So it is good. It is good to have been a baby. That's good. It was good while it lasted. But then different periods and stages in life come and go. And the beauty of the art is in all its curvature. So there are gracious ways of aging. Have you seen that our time is rejecting aging? Have you said that? So people are doing all that is in their power and far beyond, trying not to age at any cost. At any cost. Well, there is a positive side on that. And the positive side is that please don't hasten the process. So that's good. But there is a process and it has its own beauty. Have you come to know some elderly people that because of their wisdom, because of their perspective on life, really, really illuminate your own ways? I have met many of them. And that's wonderful. So I know that it is difficult to say, and I will not ask you to repeat after me. But take this sentence. I won't be ever young. And I don't wish to be always young. It is difficult. It goes so opposed. But it is part of human beauty. It is part of human beauty. Probably you can take this example. You see the beauty of a baby. Babies are so beautiful, so cute. But it is important that they reach another, a different level of beauty. You don't expect and you don't wish your baby to stay a baby for years and years and years. No, it is good that she grows up. It is good. And then a different kind of beauty flourishes. So it is wonderful that she became a teenager, a very peaceful teenager, a very calm and obedient teenager. It is it is beautiful. It is a different kind of beauty. But then a different kind of beauty is waiting for her. When she married to a wonderful person, that is you, dear man. When she married to a wonderful person, wonderful man, well, that was a different kind of beauty. She was no longer a babe. She was no longer a teenager. It's a different kind of beauty. And when she became a mother, that's another picture of beauty. If you see, for example, a girl, 13, 14, with a baby, I'm sure you don't feel so comfortable. Well, there's some beauty in that picture, but too young to be a mother. And you know that adolescent pregnancies are not always the best recipe for a good future in society. So you wouldn't be that happy seeing a 13 years old girl with a baby. But when you see a woman that is happy to be married and is happy to be a mother, and she is holding her baby, it is so, so beautiful. And it is a different kind of beauty. And when you see that she, years after that, becomes a grandma, and then there's the beauty of the grandma who feels herself so glad that she spent her life manifesting in so many ways love and care and protection and nourishing life in every possible way. Now that I mentioned my mother, I remember 4 or 5 years ago, she was in good health, thanks be to God. Almost to the end, she was in relatively good health and very much conscious of herself and everything else. And I asked her, "Mom, would you like to go back in time to some period in your life?" And she said, "You know what? I don't. Every stage was lived to the fullness. I don't like to go backwards." But it wasn't only her words. It is that she was so convinced and so convincing about this. So my mother, and she was 75 at that point, my mother didn't have teenage beauty. She didn't have babe beauty. But she had the wonderful, wonderful beauty of a 75 years old lady that had spent all her life nourishing, taking care, illuminating, inspiring, giving so much of herself to so many people. And I can see her eyes, and her eyes, of course, were telling the story of 75 years. 75 years! But those 75 years were so well spent that we all felt to the last moment, and even now, so proud of her. It is a different kind of beauty. This is the Christian message. The Christian message is that God is pronouncing you. Give God the opportunity to finish his sentence. Give God the opportunity to finish his sentence in his own way. Euthanasia is a horrible crime because that's trying to mute God. He's saying to God, "I don't like your language. I don't like your message." The Catholic teaching, my goodness, the Catholic teaching is so, so precious, so beautiful. And I'd like you to feel really, really proud of being a Catholic. Because this kind of teaching, even if you think of that from the intellectual point of view, is so beautiful. Life is an arc, and it is good to be so. What makes my life precious, it is not the hardware. No, the hardware could be improved. Could be, in many ways. The world record for 100 meters flat is like 9.7 seconds. And some engineers have studied hardly and deeply the human body, and they say that there's no hope whatsoever that any human being can reach 100 meters in less than 9 seconds ever. So there are limitations to human hardware, if you want to use that expression. But it is not because of the limitations. Every language has limitations. Some linguists in England studied the simplest elements of human diction, pronunciation, and they were able to distinguish 170 different sounds that can come out of the human mouth and throat apparatus. The English language uses about 30 or something like that. So, there is enormous possibilities for communication, but the main thing is, it is not my hardware, it is not my limitations. Even with limitations, I can sing the praises of the Lord. Even with limitations, I can express the greatness of my Creator. So it is not because of the limitations that I am a Christian. It is not because of the limitations of my language. Language is in this at this time my body. It is not because of my limitations that I am happy with my body. It is because it is the instrument, the limited, bounded instrument, but the instrument that is able to proclaim God's greatness. What do you realize from this? That without faith, the only future is ruling machines that rule humans. That's the only possibility. The other case is fully appreciation of God's gift of existence in each one of us and awareness that we all are unfinished sentences. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit.